Have you ever wondered what your purpose was, like your life's purpose? Stay tuned and find out how to find yours.
Hey, this is Brad Block, host of The Physician's Guide to Doctoring. This is a personal and professional development podcast for physicians where we have experts on the show that try to teach us everything we should have been learning while we were memorizing Krebs cycle. Hey there, it's Brad. As someone who's passionate about podcasting, I've always thought there should be more support for physicians who want to share their stories and expertise. That's why we're launching Doctor Podcast Network.
We're bringing together a community of physician podcasters with one goal in mind: to provide the tools, connections, and resources you need to grow your show. So whether you've been podcasting for a while or maybe you're just starting, we've designed this network to support you every step of the way, and we're going to help each other rise, not compete.
If this sounds like something you benefit from, we'd love for you to join us as we get closer to launch. So you can sign up at drpodcastnetwork.co for early access. Stay tuned for more details in the coming weeks. Really looking forward to what we can create together. Dr. Podcast Network, where doctors podcast.
Dr. Podcast Network, where doctors podcast.
Dr. Podcast Network, where doctors podcast.
Welcome back to the podcast. We have a recurring guest today because he keeps writing books. So we have Dr. Jordan Grummet. He's known as Doc G in the financial independence retire early community. He's a well-known voice there, well-established voice, on top of the fact that he is an associate medical director at Unity Hospice and a Plutus award-winning podcaster for his show Earn and Invest, where he does talk about financial issues. So being a financial expert combined with his experience in hospice and learning about what's genuinely important to people at the end of their lives, it gives him a unique perspective on how to intentionally spend money. And that's why he wrote his first book, Taking Stock, A Hospice Doctor's Advice on Financial Independence, Building Wealth and Living a Regret-Free Life. And if you haven't heard my interview with him previously, definitely check that one out and definitely check out the book. It's like life-changing material. But apparently that wasn't enough. So now he's back to discuss his second book, The Purpose Code. So he's already taught us how to spend money consistent with our values. So now he's going to teach us how to find our purpose. So Dr. Jordan Grummet, thank you so much for coming back.
Bradley, thank you for having me. And the funny thing is, after writing the book, Taking Stock, I kept on getting the same question over and over again. You keep on talking about purpose, but how do I find purpose? So the second book really stems from the first one, the questions people had after reading Taking Stock.
And I think it's important for those that saw the movie The Jerk with Steve Martin. I'm not sure if you get this question where he talks about finding his special purpose. I'm sure there are like three people in the audience that are going to get this joke, but you know, that's not the special purpose that we're talking about. That's where we're talking about finding your individual purpose in life. So let's start with, what do we get wrong about purpose? What do we get wrong? Because it seems like it's intuitive. You got to find what you're meant to do, and it's a rocky road to getting there. So what do we get wrong?
A number of things. Let me put it most simply. First and foremost, you said a key word. How do we find our purpose? The truth of the matter is we don't find purpose. We actually create it. But it is true there are these anchors of purpose, these things that are important for us. There have been really good studies that show that purpose is associated with health, longevity, and happiness. So purpose is really important. On the other hand, other studies show that over 91% of people have something called purpose anxiety. Searching for purpose makes them anxious and depressed. And part of the big reason is exactly that question. We tend to think of it incorrectly. And in fact, I think purpose is probably more than one phenomenon. It's probably two, what I like to call big P purpose and little P purpose. Right. We can go into the details about what each one of those is, but I think big P purpose is actually mostly associated with anxiety and doesn't make us happy. And little P purpose is a little bit more of that enduring purpose that brings us that happiness, health, and longevity. And it's actually getting purpose right.
Please explain. Please elaborate. What's the difference between big P and little P?
So here's the thing. Most people think that big P purpose is purpose. So what is big P purpose? This is big, audacious purpose. The idea that I want to be a billionaire or president, or I want to be an astronaut and land on the moon, or I want to cure cancer. These are these big, audacious goals, which are scarcity mindset oriented. In other words, how many people are going to become president? Very few. How many people are going to become astronauts and travel the moon? Very few. So very scarcity oriented, very goal oriented. And I think this is a real key here. Often we develop a sense of purpose based on a goal. And if we get to the goal, we feel like, oh, this was great and we're happy. If we don't get to the goal, we're upset or sad. But the problem with that is a lot of times we don't necessarily have control over whether we make it to the goal or not, especially with more big, audacious purpose. So if you want to be president, you have to be the right person at the right time, saying the right things, and you have to have abundance of luck. And the truth of the matter is most of us aren't going to have that. And so big P purpose sets you up for frustration and often failure, whereas little P purpose, instead of worrying about goals, really we focus on what do we love doing? It's all about process, the process of doing the things we do, not necessarily whether we get to a goal or not. This is incredibly abundant. If you think about it, there could be a million things out there that we love to do. And it's also really hard to fail.
That's really interesting because I had interviewed Kyra Bobinette, who studies habit, a bunch of months ago. And what she had said was one of the differences between someone who's more successful about starting new habits is if you have a performance mindset where you have a specific concrete goal in mind, I need to lose 10 pounds, then you're more likely to be unsuccessful or it's going to wane over time. It's going to work only in the short term and not in the long term. Whereas if you're someone who's more of like an iterative mindset where this lifestyle is working for me now, and when it stops working for me, I'll try something else. Like they're more in the process than the outcome, then they're more likely to be successful and achieve those, whatever those goals are, because it's process over product, which is one of the things we try to do with our kids.
Yeah, totally. Over,
like studying is the important part, not the answers on the test.
And let me be clear, there's nothing wrong with goals per se. But in my mind, purpose should be goal agnostic, not goal phobic. In other words, when you're truly doing something you love, you enjoy, that lights you up, when you're in that flow state, it's because you love doing that thing, regardless of what comes of it. I always talk about podcasting. I love podcasting. The reason is when you and I are sitting here with mics in front of our face, this is the best use of my time. It creates the most joy. And it doesn't matter if no one listens to us, because when I'm in the moment doing this right now, it fills me up.
I don't know. And it matters to me if nobody listens.
But the point is, at some point, if your goal is to have a million downloads, you don't have a huge amount of control over whether you're going to get a million downloads in the next month. You can try, you can market it, you can put a lot of money into it, you can put a lot of time into it, but you don't have 100% agency over that. But you do have agency over how you feel while you're doing it, which makes it incredibly abundant. And if let's think about this, let's think about a big audacious goal you have that you actually met. Maybe that was becoming a doctor. Maybe it was some grand achievement. If you don't enjoy the process of doing it, you're spending 95 to 97% of your time getting there. And if you're not enjoying it just for those few minutes you have in the spotlight when you get the thing, but that goes away because after 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes after you got the thing, it's not so exciting anymore. We habituate down to a certain level of happiness. And so for us, becoming a doctor was this great, big, audacious goal, which was really exciting. But after 6 months, a year of it or so, it was nothing new.
Yeah.
So if we didn't enjoy the process of getting there and then the process of practicing, we'd find ourselves rather disappointed.
So that sounds like the arrival fallacy. That if it's the process, I enjoy seeing patients and I enjoy learning new things. So as a resident, I was seeing patients and learning new things. And certainly it was challenging, but enjoying the process. Now as an attending, I'm going to learn how to do new procedures and learn new things and continue seeing patients. So then it's still the same thing. But I would imagine it's also a bit of a moving target. So what your purpose is now might not have been what your purpose was 10 years ago.
Totally. 5 years ago. Totally. You can have tons of different types of purpose. Podcasting is one of my purposes. I love reading. Reading is part of my purpose. I love exercising. Exercising is part of my purpose. I also like writing books, which is a little bit more goal-oriented. It's a little bit bigger, but I enjoy really the process of doing it. So I can have all sorts of versions of this little P purpose. And the great thing about it, what's so freeing about it, is when you stop enjoying the process of doing it, you stop doing it. So I've said I'd like to write books for the next 10 years, but you know what? 5 years from now, I may find the process isn't joyful anymore. It doesn't feel intentional. I don't get into a flow state when I'm doing it. Then it's time to find something else. We're lucky. We can jump from thing to thing. And this is, again, that great abundance. When we talk about big P purpose, it's really scarcity. With little P purpose, it's just so abundant. There's so many things you can do that can fill your time up and you can be intentional about it and can bring you joy.
So what's the difference between purpose and doing things you like to do. Because that's what it sounds like. I like playing guitar. I like hanging out with my kids. I like podcasts. And so I'm going to fill my time as much with things I like to do. How is that any different from just, it sounds like you're just substituting the
word. It isn't. That's little p purpose. Basically, purpose is this idea of why we do what we do. And most of the time, why we do what we do is it fills us up. It brings us joy. We enjoy the process of doing it. People who listen to me talk about this all the time say, yeah, but what about legacy and impact? But the truth of the matter is, in my belief, a lot of times we actually create a bigger legacy and impact when we go after these little versions of purpose than we do when we go after these bigger versions of purpose.
Yes. And again, that's a big audacious goal that you might end up disappointing yourself in the end if you don't create this legacy and impact that you were hoping to. And then that leads to more stress and anxiety, which then takes away from little p, because then you're not doing those other things that you like doing. But what about, I think one thing we struggle with is, but are we good at it or not? Right? My purpose should be in line with my skill set.
Why?
Although I'm going to also push back against that myself, right? Because one of the reasons I created this podcast is because I wasn't so good at the doctor-patient communication, to the point where when I told my parents I was going to apply to medical school, they said, you're going to have to talk to people. Right. So I created this podcast to put myself in front of experts that would help me from outside the field of medicine that could help us with this very specific type of interaction. And so in doing this for 6 years and almost 400 episodes, I've gotten a lot better at it. I've taken that advice and I've used it and applied it and iterated it. And so now I took something I wasn't good at and now this is part of my purpose. I love talking about this stuff. I love talking about how to help people do it. Do it efficiently. We can get you to end the visits faster and have everyone be happier. So I just made the point.
Yeah, and it's true. The truth of the matter is a lot of times we won't be good at what we find purposeful. Listen, the thing I do best in the world is being a doctor, but it wasn't filling me up anymore. I didn't enjoy the process of doing it. So now I'm a writer, I'm a podcaster, I'm a public speaker, and you know what? I'm not as gifted when it comes to those things as I was at being a doctor, but I'm a heck of a lot happier. And when I was a doctor, I had a lot of patients and I impacted their lives for better, for worse. As a podcaster and a writer, my books get out to 10, 20, 30,000 people. My podcast gets out to millions of people after years and years of doing this. I have impact in my own way. I affect people in my own way, but not because my goal was to impact millions of people. My goal was to actually do something that deeply filled me up, that felt intentional, the kind of thing I wanted to show up every day and do genuinely. But because I did those things genuinely, I connected with my listeners, I connected with my readers, I connected with other podcasters like you, and that became my community. And I'll give you a spoiler alert here. It's not even purpose that I really think leads to happiness. It's purpose leads to community and interactions with other people, deeper interactions. And that's actually what I truly believe brings happiness.
And community, right? Like we're finding more and more that the strength of your social connections is the best predictor of longevity
happiness.
And happiness.
The Harvard Adult Health Study looked at people over 70 years. They interviewed people every other year, interviewed their families, not just them, their families, took all sorts of data. And their massive conclusion after all this time is it wasn't money, it wasn't position, it was your relationships with other people. That's what makes you happy.
And I've been telling that to my patients. I've been like, you want to do something for your health? Hang out with your friends. Who knew? Holy cow.
And you know what? This is what I love. It's not just hang out with your friends. I would take it a step further. I would say deeply get involved in things that are purposeful to you and you will form new relationships. You will collaborate people with interests that are similar to yours. They will see you lit up and you will attract them like a moth to the flame and you'll collaborate. You'll become teacher and student. You'll become mentor and mentee. And that's where you really change the world. It's when you touch those people around you by being purposeful and interesting and excited where you really change things. In the book, I actually give a story at the beginning about a guy who deeply changed my life, but he didn't do it by meaning to. He was an antiques store owner. His name is Roman, and he decided in the middle of having this antiques business to start selling baseball cards because he was enthralled by this idea of baseball cards. And because he did that, he created a community as an antique store. And I was a middle schooler. I had a learning disability. My dad had died when I was young. I had no friends. I had no community. And he created a place where I could go and be safe and meet other kids who are like me. He actually ended up dying of cancer. His store closed. But 30 years later, I'm still talking about this guy, Roman, and his store because he gave me the confidence to conquer life, to become a doctor. And I think about all the other people who went to that store, all those other geeks and nerds who had no community, got that little bit of confidence that allowed them to do what they were going to do in the world. And I contrast that to someone like Mickey Mantle, who is one of my favorite baseball players back then. And all I wanted to do was own Mickey Mantle baseball cards. But you know what? 30 years later, Mickey Mantle hasn't affected my life, but this guy, Roman, has deeply and profoundly changed me. And this is what I say. Roman didn't do it because he was trying to change the world. He was doing it because he found a sense of purpose within selling baseball cards, and that lit him up and excited him, and he attracted people like me in the community that we formed.
You spent years learning how to save lives, but no one taught you how to secure your own. When you work one-on-one with a CFP professional financial coach, you get a blueprint tailored for the long game of your complex situation. At My Financial Coach, they help physicians choose the best strategy to optimize your annuities and investments, implement tax-saving strategies, and tackle debt like your student loans or mortgage while refining your path to retirement. Save up for that boat, a child's college or wedding, or even a vacation home. Plan ahead for the impacts of the unexpected and understand how much life insurance you actually need. Project how getting married, raising children, or taking care of an aging parent affects the progress towards your goals. Advice-only financial planning through a fixed monthly subscription, not commissions, to keep planning unbiased and in your best interest. A financial plan isn't just about your money, it's about your future. Visit myfinancialcoach.com/physicians-guide-to-doctoring to meet with a financial coach and find out if concierge financial planning is right for you. Again, myfinancialcoach.com/physicians-guide-to-doctoring.
But what about the people that say, but my purpose doesn't earn me revenue? My purpose doesn't make me money. You see all these people that are buying and selling companies and growing. They're like you. You've got Earn and Invest, which has sponsors on it, so you get revenue from it. What about all those people that are like, but my stuff doesn't earn me a living? What am I supposed to do?
It's similar to what I said in taking stock. I think the mistake we make is we put our finances first, and then we're like, once we get our finances set, we can start thinking about things like purpose, identity, and connections. Yeah. The truth of the matter is, we need to start building a sense of purpose around these purpose anchors, these important things in our lives now, and then fit our financial lives into that. So for some people, they are going to be stuck at a 9-to-5 and they need that 9-to-5 to make money and there aren't other options. But you know what? That's 9-to-5. The U.S. Times study, they do this every bunch of years. It's done by the Labor Bureau. Shows that your average person has between 5 and 6 hours of free time a day. Your average person. And in fact, wealthy people have slightly less time than less wealthy people. So even if you are stuck at a 9-to-5, there's nothing that stops you from pursuing some sense of purpose in other things you do. And so you could say, okay, I have kids. I can't do that. Look at your job. What is the one thing you like about your job? Maybe you start pushing within your job to do that more often. So let's say you are a store manager and the only thing you like doing is the stocking that you do once a week. Everything else you hate. Maybe you need to talk to your employer about spending more time stocking, right? Or work at some of the other offices or some of the other stores and help them do their stocking. Maybe you need to become a stocking expert. The point is not that purpose is supposed to have you quit your job and quit all your income sources and take up all your time and space. But the idea is that winning the game, in a sense, is building up as much purpose as possible and spending our time doing purposeful things. So if you look at our lifetimes, we can't buy or sell time. We can't trade it. It's not a commodity. It's something that passes no matter what you do. So I like to think of this as like we have these time slots. all you can do is fill these time slots with purposeful activities. The best thing you can do is try to fill as many as possible with these purposeful activities, even if some of them you just can't.
You talked about this in Taking Stock, and I forgot the way that you phrased it. You had a specific term for the things that you don't like doing versus the things that you do like doing.
The things you love versus the things you loathe.
Something else.
So if you loathe your 9-to-5, you can stay there. But I would say we have a certain set of tools in our tool chest to live a good life. And we think of money as a goal, but money is just a tool. And so if you don't have a lot of that tool and you're working from 9-to-5 Monday through Friday, but let's say you happen to be young, maybe you've got your weekends, maybe you've got your youth, maybe you've got more energy than I have because you're 25 and I'm 51. How can you use those tools to maybe pursue something purposeful when you're not at work? And maybe that purposeful thing does generate some money, and eventually it helps you decrease your time at work that you don't like. Maybe it doesn't, but it's just a good way to spend some time. I don't think the money has to keep you from doing things you like doing, but you do have to be intentional about filling your time with important, purposeful activities.
We're physicians, right? And the listeners are physicians. Isn't that enough of a purpose? Or should we feel guilty about maybe at one point it was a purpose for us, but now it's no longer a purpose for us? You know, these people that say it's my calling. What about those of us where maybe it was our calling and it's no longer, or those of us who it was never a calling and it was always a job? Should we be feeling any differently about this?
So you say, is being a doctor purpose enough? I don't know. Do you enjoy the process of doing it regardless of the goals and outcome? Would you do it if no one was paying you for it? If the answer is yes, then being a doctor is enough. On the other hand, if you're like, I don't enjoy the process of doing this most of the time, I like the paycheck, but this isn't filling me up, most likely you do need to start thinking about what are some other things that are purposeful in your life. Does that mean you have to stop being a doctor? No, keep being a doctor. But how do you start building purpose in other places in your life? How do you bring it into your work life if possible? If you're working 60 hours a week, what feels purposeful for you at work, and how do you maximize that activity and minimize other things? If you're working 40 hours a week and you don't have kids and you have your weekends free, how do you start building purpose around those weekends, doing things you really like doing? Because if you're going to a job that you don't love, that doesn't feel purposeful to you, and you're in the process but really just want the paycheck, you're not going to connect as much to other people. You're not going to build and collaborate. You're not going to get all those benefits of health and happiness and longevity.
But there are these golden handcuffs that come with being a doctor, right? Like, we trained all this time, we've got a bunch of debt, and we've got to pay it back. And being a doctor makes us significantly more money than anything else because we're not trained in anything else. We're not skilled in anything else. The way that being a doctor puts us head and shoulders above people who aren't because of how it's compensated.
I think that's true, but it's also somewhat of an excuse. What's the sense of great compensation if you're not living the life you want to live? Yes, you can pay off debt. Yes, you have to put food on the table. But if you're really not liking what you do, it might make some sense to get paid a little bit less, but then create a career you enjoy a little more in which you have more longevity, more joy. I'm the perfect example. I basically volunteered to do hospice my first week of medical school, but then somehow convinced myself through medical school and residency that hospice wasn't something I could do for a living, even though I had profound joy in doing it. And so I went and did internal medicine. I built my own practice. I ended up getting stressed and burned out, and I didn't love what I did, and eventually decided to leave medicine because I got my finances enough in order I could.
You're financially independent.
But let me finish this, what I'm getting to. The one thing I decided to keep doing in medicine, even after I had enough money, was hospice work. Because hospice work I would do even if I wasn't being paid for it. So here's the million-dollar question. If I had decided to do hospice from day one, something I had deep joy and love for, realizing that I probably would make a lot less money, I was making a lot more money owning my own practice, and I was doing all sorts of side hustles and stuff, I probably wouldn't have become financially independent as fast. It would have taken me years and years longer, but I would have had a much longer career. I wouldn't have burnt out nearly as fast because I would have been doing something that was much more joyful for me. Now, I'm not Pollyanna. That doesn't mean I'm going to love every second of it. The truth of the matter lies somewhere in between. We need to find ways to bring purpose into what we're doing today without it blowing us up financially, but without also accepting that I'm going to live a life I loathe because it puts money in my pocket. Because the point of money is to buy happiness. And if you're using money to buy more money, but it's not getting you to the happiness, it's not getting you to the purpose, it's not getting you to better connections, you're going to one day on your deathbed look back and say, I spent all my time doing stuff I hated for this god of money that I never even used to get the reward. The reward is the purpose. And if you think about it, the reward doesn't require the money. So why do we spend so much time trying to get the money to buy the reward when we don't even need it on some level? Now, that doesn't mean, again, that we shouldn't try to make money and pay off our debts and live a nice life and have a nice house. But when you carry it to extremes, you realize we don't even know most of the time what we're doing all this hard work for.
Yeah. It reminds me of a Shel Silverstein poem that I read with my son the other day about someone who got three wishes from rubbing a genie. And he wished for more wishes, and his wishes got wishes. Spent all this time until he died on a pile of wishes. Never did he use a single one of them. And so, same idea. But I think you can also apply what you're saying to even a lesser degree, right? Let's say you are a neurosurgeon who's making $750,000 a year, and you're going to go from $750,000 at your certain lifestyle to consulting where you make $100,000 a year. Clearly, I'm making these numbers up. That's a tremendous change in income. But to the point that you said earlier, maybe take a little less call. Maybe in some of your more time, like, just start off working at the edges. Work at the edges and see what works, see what doesn't work. What do you really not like? Maybe brain tumors, but you don't like spine. Try and like...
Totally.
Yeah. And then, like you said at the beginning, you're creating your purpose from your skill set.
You have three levers, really, especially if you're in a job you don't like. You have the art of subtraction, trying to get rid of what you don't like within your job while maintaining your pay and doing the things you do like. You have the joy of addition, which means either bringing in things you like to do at work or even outside of work, bringing in joyful, purposeful things into your life. And then if subtraction and addition don't work, you have substitution. Working for a different employer, spending less time in the OR and more time in the clinic, or more time in the OR and less time in the clinic. Like, we have these three levers, and the key is, how do I use these levers in any situation?
Yeah. Something that I want to get to before we finish is, you make the distinction between meaning and purpose. So I want to ask you what the difference is and why that distinction is important.
So meaning and purpose are like two sides of the same coin. Or what I like to say is, happiness, I believe, really is built out of two things, which is meaning and purpose. Meaning is our cognitive understanding of the past. It resides in your mind. It's all about how we interpret the things we've gone through. It's the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves. Happy people tend to tell themselves a hero story. Things might have been bad. I might have gone through all sorts of horrible things, but look where I am today and how I've overcome them. Unhappy people tend to tell themselves a victim story. Oh my God, all these bad things happened to me, and that's why I am where I am today. That's your past, though. And like I said, happiness is meaning plus purpose. Meaning helps us get to the sense of enough. So people who have a true sense of meaning and tell themselves a hero story basically are telling themselves, I am enough, I was enough, I had enough. People who tell themselves a victim story are saying, I was never enough, I never had enough, I don't have enough now. If you come to present day feeling like you don't have enough and not having a real sense of meaning, you're going to have trouble with purpose, because purpose is all about the present and future. And as opposed to being about thoughts, purpose is about actions. They're the things we do that light us up. They're the activities that we consume ourselves with over the days, weeks, and years of our lives. Happiness is both. If you're struggling with enough, if you don't have a sense of meaning, it's really hard to move forward into purpose, because every time you try to do something new or purposeful, those demons, those stories you tell yourself, the victim stories, are going to say, why even try this? It's just going to blow up in my face. Nothing ever works. And so you can't purpose your way to happiness. You have to get that meaning piece first. And once you feel at peace with your past and feel like you had some agency throughout your past, you then can use that sense of meaning to move forward joyfully into purpose, into your present and future. And that's why you need both. And a lot of people make the mistake of actually not understanding the sense of meaning. They struggle with enough. They struggle with trying to be things that people told them they were supposed to be. We're talking about generational trauma. And so they think, if I just find a sense of purpose, I'm going to erase all this feeling of victimhood during childhood. And it just doesn't work. Like, you've got to come to some sense of meaning first, and then you jump joyfully into purpose. Because your purpose doesn't need to prove anything. It doesn't need to prove you're enough. It doesn't need to prove that you can make an impact on the world. That's not the point of purpose. Purpose is supposed to fill you up. It's meaning that does the rest of those things.
That's amazing. That's an amazing way to turn the way that we think about these things on its head. I love it. And I was going to ask you, how do we talk to our kids about it? But the answer is in the same way that we've been talking about this the whole time, right? No differently. No different.
Kids are great at this.
Yeah.
Kids are great at finding purpose. You take really little kids and put them in the backyard, and they will be like, I'm going to build a pool. I'm going to build a castle. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Little kids, believe it or not, are really good at doing things they love regardless of the goal or the end point. Little kids are all about process. It's only as we get older and get inculcated by society where it's like, what are you going to do for a living? Well, you can't build a pool in the backyard for a living. You got to be a doctor or a lawyer. And so we transition from these very purposeful, happy beings, especially when we're very little, to relatively unhappy, goal-oriented adults.
Find your little pea purpose and you won't be. There you go.
I definitely think that's the case. And it's certainly at least helped me and a lot of people I've coached and a lot of people that I've gone through this experience with. And I've seen that little pea purpose can really make you feel that sense of abundance and happiness.
Well, and you said it's coming out in January 2025, the purpose code?
January 7th, 2025.
And for those who haven't checked it out yet, definitely check out the podcast, Earn and Invest, and the first book, Taking Stock. Dr. Jordan Grummet, thank you so much for what you do. And what you do through your purpose, helping all the people you do.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast.
Thanks for listening. I have a favor to ask. You listened to the episode until the end, which means you either fell asleep or you really liked the episode. So please share it or like it or comment on a social media post or write us a 5-star review, something. It would really help me out. And maybe what you learned from this episode can help someone else too. The views expressed in this episode are those of the interviewer and interviewee and don't represent the views of their employer or even their significant other. Even though the magic of podcasting make it sound like I'm talking directly to you, this is not a doctor-patient relationship, and this is not medical advice or financial advice or really any advice. Thank us again for listening to The Physician's Guide to Doctoring.